Hello and welcome to Ukraine Calling, your weekly review of what's been happening in Ukraine with a focus on a main issue. I'm Bohdan Nahailo for Hromadske Radio, and here's a look at some of the stories that were in the news. It's been a difficult week in Ukraine. Military attacks intensified to what the OSCE called the highest yet levels. There were over 10,000 explosions focused on the towns of Avdiivka and Yasinovata in the Donetsk Oblast on the Ukrainian side of the front line. The result is a looming humanitarian disaster along the lines of what the world saw in Aleppo in Syria. An estimated 8 to 15,000 civilians, of whom about 2,500 are children, are living without power or heat in below-freezing winter temperatures. Ukrainian authorities are bringing in emergency supplies as much as is possible, given the continued heavy shelling. Planning for evacuation of civilians is underway. There have been military casualties. The constant tragedy of war sometimes overshadows the positive developments in Ukraine. This week, Ivana Klimpush-Tsintsadze, Deputy Prime Minister on European and Euro-Atlantic Integration, reported that in the past few years, Ukraine has made more progress in reforms than in all the years of independence. She pointed to the positive results of the past 2 to 3 years in moving towards European integration. Highlights include reforms in the energy sector, the public procurement system, judicial reform, the creation of anti-corruption agencies, and the introduction of an e-electronic system for asset declaration by government officials. The Deputy Prime Minister also noted that Ukraine's trade with the EU increased by 6% in the first 9 months of 2016, and that the EU has become Ukraine's main trading partner. Ukraine is also planning to increase this further by decreasing non-tariff barriers. Later in the show, we'll bring you a feature interview with James Brook, editor-in-chief of the Ukraine Business Journal, a new fresh publication that looks at these issues in depth. And at the UN, Ukraine is chairing the United Nations Security Council for the month of February. As one of the 10 non-permanent members of the Council, it's Ukraine's turn. When fighting escalated, the UN Security Council expressed its grave concern on Tuesday over what it called the dangerous deterioration in eastern Ukraine and called for a halt to the violence. The new US ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, condemned Russia's, quote, aggressive actions, unquote, against Ukraine. She said, quote, I consider it unfortunate that the occasion of my first appearance here is one in which I must condemn the aggressive actions of Russia, unquote. Haley also said that sanctions against Russia will remain in place until Russia returns control over Crimea to Ukraine. Meanwhile, Russian President Putin blamed Ukraine for the escalation of war during his trip to Budapest. He said that Ukraine's leadership needs money and therefore is trying to present itself as a victim. Putin also said that Ukraine's government is using the war to deflect attention from domestic critics. We'll post a link to this speech on our website. Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban, who has raised international eyebrows for his anti-immigration stance and limiting democracy within Hungary, said during Putin's visit, quote, we hope that in the very near future, we will be welcoming new good relations between Russia and the European Union, unquote. And on Sunday, military attacks against Ukraine increased significantly. This was the day after the US President Trump had his first phone conversation with Russian President Putin. Not much was reported about the details of the conversation, but from what is known, the war in Ukraine was mentioned only in passing. A statement from the White House read, quote, both President Trump and President Putin are hopeful that after today's call, the two sides can move quickly to tackle terrorism and other important issues of mutual concern, unquote. But over the past week, according to official sources, 10 Ukrainian soldiers were killed and 79 were wounded. This is the highest rate for months. The escalation of war shocked Ukrainians who have been living with war for almost 3 years. A ceremony for the recently fallen soldiers was held on the Maidan in the country's capital on Wednesday. This week, among other things, we'll look at business opportunities in Ukraine, and we'll talk to James Brooke, the editor-in-chief of an exciting new journal called the Ukraine Business Journal, which is really something new, fresh, and also providing us with fresh insights into the business and commerce world in Ukraine. James, thank you for coming here. Let me just say a few words about you, because not everybody will know about your eminent background. You spent over 20 years with the New York Times. You were the bureau chief in Moscow, among other places, Brazil. You worked with Voice of America also.
Canada
also. So you come very well equipped for this. But before we get into the reasons why and what you're doing, I just want to tell the audience that as we are recording this, only a few hundred yards from us, a farewell service is taking place on the Maidan for the brave, heroic young men, three or four of them, I'm not sure how many today, are being sent off on their last voyage. Tribute is being paid to them by a large crowd, including some of their comrades in arms. And I'd like to start off on this rather somber note with you, James, because you've just come back this weekend from a trip to almost the front line. Could you share your impressions of the atmosphere out there and what you saw?
Yes, thank you, Bogdan. I went to about 12 kilometers away from Advika. I could hear the shelling. I was there partly, I hate to say it, just out of curiosity. If you work and live in Ukraine, I think everyone should go down and see that part. I went through five checkpoints. The soldiers were very well uniformed, alert, professional, courteous, friendly, and quiet. As you know, Ukraine is a massive country. But at the end of the final checkpoint, there was a steel cable, and a very polite soldier said we couldn't continue. And I could see the looming chimneys of the Advika coking plant, largest in Europe. They produce coking coal for the steel industry. And we could hear the shelling. It was somewhat sinister when you go down a four-lane divided highway and there's no traffic.
Was the mood one of apprehension, nervousness, or did you sense that the soldiers and the population were confident?
They seemed confident. Now, they were 15, 20 kilometers away from the front. They were doing their duties at the checkpoint. Kramatorsk, which you went through, the regional capital, was totally quiet. Now, at that time, it was Sunday. We didn't know that these four men had been killed, and now the number's up to eight, I believe. So it was the beginning of this rebel offensive.
You'll probably agree with me that here in Kyiv, the war seems far, far away. You don't sense on the streets, unless you see injured, maimed soldiers occasionally, or these almost funeral-like commemorations, you don't really sense that less than 1,000 kilometers from here, you have this very vicious war still continuing.
Yes, and you said less than 1,000 kilometers. It is very far away. This is a massive country. As I went on the train, I just thought, you know, what a pipe dream it is for the Kremlin to think they could actually, you know, occupy Ukraine. It is massive, larger than California. It is huge. And we in the Ukraine Business Journal, we don't focus on the war. The war is affecting literally 3% of the national territory if you deduct Crimea. It is in the southeast corner, and we are focusing on the other 97% of Ukrainians who are working and investing and trying to build the country up economically.
Well, just before we get to the journal itself, if the war seems remote here in Kyiv, it seems even more remote for most of Europe and for Washington and the States, I presume.
Yes. My feeling, and a lot of people are afraid, why did this offensive start? It literally started within hours of the Putin-Trump call, and I think it may be a bid by the separatists and their Russian backers to say, don't forget us, we're players, we can cause problems, make sure we have a seat at the table.
Yes, thanks. Well, at least in the last day or two, we've seen some action, resolutions and statements being passed or made in the Security Council at the UN, the European Union, and others. Let's hope that this has some impact this week. Anyway, James, turning to your new journal, tell us, the Ukraine Business Journal, is this the right time to start off such a journal in Ukraine?
Well, there's always risk associated with Ukraine. If you want boring and stable, move to Copenhagen. But seriously, the real game changer for Ukraine is this free trade association agreement with Europe. Canadian listeners will know what happened with NAFTA, Canada, the United States, and Mexico. Free trade agreements have enormous powers. In this case, as in the NAFTA-Mexico case, you're marrying very low wage rates in Ukraine with geographical proximity to essentially the world's largest and richest consumer market, which is the EU, with 500 million buyers. So low wage rates, geographical proximity, and free trade. So we've seen what happened in coastal China. We've seen what happened in northern Mexico. Northern Mexico, at the beginning of NAFTA, they were opening an assembly plant every day, 3,000 in total. People think, oh, well, you know, Ukraine is more expensive than Asia. Unfortunately, today, in dollar terms, the average Ukrainian wage rate is $200 a month, which is half that of coastal China.
What do you see the main area where Ukraine's appeal is? I mean, is it the skills, the labor force, the resources that the country has, the infrastructure that already is in place, some would say quite old in many areas? What is it that makes this country so attractive?
It's all that. I think the highly educated labor force, the very cheap labor force, and the proximity to Europe. Don't forget, the Chinese are spending billions and probably trillions of dollars to create this Silk Road of ports, harbors, railroads, highways. Simple goal is to get a container from Guangzhou on the coast of China to Hamburg in 2 weeks. Anywhere in Western Ukraine is 1 to 2 days from most of the European Union. So Ukraine has had delivered on a platter the world's richest market, access to the world's richest market.
But Jim, for many people in the outside world, Ukraine seems to be not a positive story, not a positive case, a failing state, some would say, because of this hybrid warfare and propaganda that Moscow is feeding. And one gets the impression that the economy is destroyed, stagnant. Do you see potential there for recovery, for growth, or is it already happening?
Yeah, Ukraine is already turning around economically. Car sales, I think, were up 40% last year. Airline traffic was up 25%. Container traffic through the ports is up 24%. So the horseshoe has already happened. Ukraine is coming back. Obviously, the most dynamic area will be closest to Europe. I believe that the Lviv Oblast regional economy is growing at 6 or 7% a year. Now, this is the area that will be most immediately affected by the Free Trade Pact. So I see a lot of growth. I see you've got to think outside the box, and Ukraine is Europe's next frontier economy.
Are the legal norms in place? Are the mechanisms in place to ensure transparency, you know, Western ways of doing business?
We all know Ukraine is very far from perfect, and there's unacceptably high corruption. But look at the World Bank's club of the top 10 fastest growing countries in the world. You'll find places like Cambodia, Mozambique, countries that are not ex that have worse corruption than Ukraine. So just because you have corruption doesn't mean you can grow. And that club of top 10 economies, they've been growing at like 7% for a decade. It isn't just a fluky year. So there's no reason why Ukraine cannot grow with corruption or while repressing and combating corruption. One does not rule out the other.
Do you see external investors showing a greater interest, beginning to return or to check out Ukraine?
The pioneers are coming. One good indicator was the Lviv International Economic Forum, which was held in October. And the attendance compared to the year before, the attendance was up 5 times. So Europeans are learning their geography, and they're discovering where Lviv is in the west and Kharkiv is in the east, and they're learning what is what and the distances. The distance from Kyiv to the war zone is the equivalent of driving from Paris to Marseille and back.
You're emphasizing Europe. You're emphasizing the Euro-Atlantic, shall we say, partnerships and structures and markets. What about Turkey, for example? You see a lot of Turkish presence here and on the surface an investment. How would you rate that?
Well, Turkey, they're wonderful in construction and they know the area. And for geopolitical reasons, obviously, they want to have good relations with Ukraine to balance off Russia. Russia wants to turn the Black Sea into a Russian lake, which the Turks obviously do not want. I think the Turks are very flexible businessmen. They work in places like Turkmenistan, in Central Asia. Many sectors, they're first-class, first-world companies. It's very positive. Let's not forget Canada. The Canadian Parliament and the Ukrainian Parliament are on the verge of approving the Free Trade Association Pact between Canada and Ukraine, which I think will have beneficial results.
Yes. New government and a very dynamic ambassador here, obviously making an impact. Jim, now that we've spoken about the general lay of the land, as it were, tell us a little bit more about your journal. What kind of product is it? Is it a hard copy one? Is it an electronic publication? How have you approached this task?
The Ukraine Business Journal is all Ukraine, all business, all English, and all digital. The only paper and ink you will find is the brochure I gave you a little while ago. We will not be in paper and ink, but by being digital, we're accessible in Bay Street, Toronto, Fifth Avenue, New York, you know, Canary Wharf, UK, London. Digital is the way to go. And we focus on business. We focus on success stories. We focus on business opportunities and obstacles, new companies coming in. It's extraordinary. There are green shoots. There is activity, but it just simply is not reported. And when people read the Business Journal, they get quite excited because they see that things are happening.
I was impressed looking at it how much news there is there and items that don't seem to be covered anywhere else.
Yes, because for various reasons, the press focuses on the war, the politics, and the corruption. I actually met with the Ukraine correspondent for an American news service who told me that his bosses, American bosses in Moscow, said that he was only to report negative news from Ukraine.
Interesting. Anyway, prospects for the next year or two, how do you see things shaping up? Obviously, the international environment is not as conducive, auspicious as perhaps it was a year or two ago in terms of support for Ukraine. Do you think that this issue of is it a Ukraine fatigue or other priorities taking over, that this will cause serious problems for this country?
Yes, I think the way forward for Ukraine is foreign investment. And the Ukraine Business Journal is dedicated to showing the opportunities and the obstacles. Lviv, for example, the construction projects underway will triple the Class A and B office space in Lviv in 5 years. There's a lot of development going on. There's a lot of new companies moving in. Ericsson's moving in. Intercontinental Hotel is moving in. Japanese auto parts manufacturers, Fujikor, has moved in. Leoni, a German car parts manufacturer, is in Ivano-Frankivsk. The Europeans are discovering Western Ukraine, and that will move first and fastest.
The IT sector here is particularly attractive, it seems.
Yes, Bogdan, it's very big. And Ukraine, I think, graduates 120,000 engineers every year, something like double the number of Britain. And of course, they work for a fraction, you know, maybe 20% of the pay. So the IT, the service sector is very big and growing. And it's the third largest export now of the country.
And what would your advice be, summing up, you know, finally, in this short interview to young Ukrainians that may be listening or to those who want to come to this country to invest?
Well, I think joint ventures are the way to go with foreign companies. You have to be very careful who your partners are, not just who your Ukrainian partners are, but who your foreign partners are. But I think that really is the way to go to create world-class companies, find the niche, build on the competitive advantage, which is a highly skilled, low-paid workforce, essentially, right next to Europe, cheek by jowl with Europe.
Thank you, James. Let me just remind you, dear listeners, that you've been listening to a discussion with James Brooke, the editor-in-chief of Ukraine Business Journal, a new venture here that's putting things in perspective as far as business opportunities and the business situation is concerned. But Jim, as I've said, is a veteran journalist of considerable note, and it was a pleasure to have you here, Jim, in the studio.
Bogdan, thank you very much.
A trending topic of discussion in social media this past week has been the role of the Ukrainian language in society and the rights of Ukrainian speakers as compared to the rights of speakers of Russian. These passionate debates have been inspired by the fact that there are no less than three bills on the Ukrainian language currently on the table in the Ukrainian parliament, which present three alternatives for regulating and managing the status of Ukrainian. It is another step being taken in the direction of developing a relevant linguistic policy in Ukraine. Someone who made an assured contribution to this debate was Sviatoslav Karavansky. I had the honor of knowing this man. He was a writer, a language scholar, a compiler of dictionaries, and a Soviet dissident who lived out his 97 years dedicated to defending the Ukrainian language. He spent decades in Soviet labor camps. January saw the publication of his last book of observations of Ukrainian usage. This work demonstrated, through many specific examples, how the dominance of Russian in the linguistic environment, caused by various political, economic, and social pressures, leads to the Russification of Ukrainian. Proposing ideas such as this on the Ukrainian language was unacceptable in Soviet times, and the defiant Karavansky spent 31 years, or a third of his life, in various Soviet prisons and labor camps. The last third of his life was spent living abroad in the US, and that is where in his last years he wrote the colorfully titled The Idiotisms of the Stalinist Yarishka in Ukraine's State Language by BAK Publishers. Sadly, Karavansky did not live to see the publication of this book, as he died in December 2016. In New York's Museum of Modern Art, an exhibition has opened called A Revolutionary Impulse, The Rise of the Russian Avant-Garde. The advertising for this exhibit says it contains paintings, drawings, sculpture, prints, books and graphic design, film, photography and architecture by leading figures such as Alexander Exter, Natalia Goncharova, El Lisitsky, Kazimir Malevich, Vladimir Mayakovsky, Lyubov Popova, Alexander Rodchenko, Olga Rozanova, Vladimir and Georgi Sternberg, and Dziga Vertov. This suggests that these artists were Russians, which is not the case. British journalist Jonathan Jones had a different critique. In The Guardian, he wrote, quote, "We cannot celebrate revolutionary Russian art. It is brutal propaganda," unquote. We'll post the links for you. Ukraine's influence on fashion runways is being noticed by Vogue magazine. In the latest issue, there's an article about how Ukraine's impact is bigger than you think. How Ukrainian designers like Judy Pascal are showing on the runways of Paris Fashion Week, and how international designers like Jean-Paul Gaultier, Gucci, and Dior have influences on traditional Ukrainian motifs in their collections. Watch for Dior's pre-fall 2017 denim skirt with the traditional Ukrainian wedding tablecloth rushnik motif. This week's song for you is by Kyiv's Billy Milligan Band. It's called Poroch, which means powder. They've just recorded it, and it was first played on Hromadske Radio Music show Pora Roku last Sunday. Powder has many meanings. In this song, it's about war, or rather, against war.
вона не знає правил. Їй не важливий ти. Війні немає діла до твоїх мрій, до твоїх почуттів. Почуй, як плаче матір за своїми дітьми. Від болю не врятують звання героїв, гроші та подяки. І я божеволію, мамо, я божеволію, тату, я божеволію, сестро, я божеволію, брате. Історія банальна. Він думав, що правий, що він іде захищати свій дім від злодіїв. У кабінетах грають людьми у свою гру, і пішаки вмирають, поки король торгує зброєю. І я божеволію, мамо, я божеволію, тату, я божеволію, сестро, я божеволію, брате.
And looking forward, things are changing rapidly in Ukraine and the world around it. We'll be following these developments for you. Tune in next week for a new episode. If you'd like to receive our weekly podcasts in your mailbox, or if you have any comments or suggestions, please write to us Our address is Ukraine Calling, one word, at Hromadske Radio, altogether, org. Ukraine Calling at hromadskeradio.org. I'm Bohdan Mihailo for Hromadske Radio. Thanks so much for listening.